Kiwanis International has a long history of caring for kids. Working with leading safety organizations, Kiwanis has developed a home safety checklist and other brochures to help prevent injuries to children. Visit our website at servingchildren.org.
Knives, tools, and sharp objects safely put away?
Check!
Kiwanis International, serving the children of the world.
And serving Long Island, this is WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock, time for Off the Wall. It's another Tuesday evening, and here we are, another edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, indeed, right here.
So, it's Tuesday evening. Here we are, Tuesday.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right beside you.
90.1 FM.
In the control room.
That's right.
Broadcasting.
107.3 FM, too, if you're
live.
Really close by. On the internet.
WSB.FM.
.FM, exactly. And the archive, too, which you can listen to on 2600.com/off the wall. Mm-hmm. Every single show.
Yep.
Till next week. We'll see you then.
Mm-hmm.
Good night.
That's it.
Come back, Kyle. Come on. I was kidding. People take me so literally. It was a joke. It was a joke. Okay, you know what? I'm not going to even ask what that is or why it's here. Just don't ever do that again. Meaning when it's finished. Yeah, okay. all right. We've had quite a week, quite a day. We're going to take you with us. In fact, we're open for phone calls if people want to call in and talk to us. We always like hearing from our listeners, of course. So how have you been this week?
How have I been this week?
Well, you know, without going too much into detail, because we only have an hour.
Been this week? I've been a little bit warm. It's been muggy.
Huh? Mm-hmm.
And are you mocking me?
No, I'm just trying to, you know, push you along a little bit.
Why would you ask me something and then not want to listen to it?
It's a formality, you know. Fine, it's a good week, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, fine. It's been a good week.
Some people have 3-hour shows. We have 1 hour. All right,
and that's my fault.
Taken up by this damn intro.
And that's my fault because what?
You're the timekeeper.
No, I'm not.
Well, somebody has to be. I'm sorry, I'm a bit testy. My feet still hurt. That's why. Okay, you know about my feet. They hurt.
Well, yeah, we were walking all over.
We went for a very long walk on Sunday. And today is what? Tuesday. We walked all along, you know, Belterre, that area with the you know, snooty people that don't let you trespass.
Well, pretty much the whole North Shore. That's what we did.
Well, we felt like it. Yeah, we walked all the way down that road because, you know, if you drive down that road, well, you can't park because there's no parking. So what good is that? Made it all the way to the end, and then we wound up walking on the sand dunes, which was really cool. But that's really the only way you can do it, by walking all the way there, or taking a boat.
Yeah, and it's uneven, and all kinds of terrain, and animals, and wildlife, and water, and traffic, and people boating, and barbecuing, and fishing, and yeah, it just was kind of a trial, but really worthwhile to get out and feel the earth under your feet and the sky above your head and,
and
all of that other important stuff.
And, you know, it was threatening to rain, so we were afraid we were going to feel water on our heads, but we didn't. Fortunately, it stayed okay the whole time. But, you know, we started in Fort Jeff Village, walked all the way up East Broadway, up this long hill, and then all the way down Belterre Road to the end. Then down onto the sand dunes, all the way around where the ferry comes by, and then all the way on the shore, which is a lot long. When you walk on the shore, it's a lot longer than walking directly from one place to another. So I figured we probably did about 6 miles or so. 6 miles walking, which, you know, that's nothing to sneeze at.
No, especially if you have seasonal allergies and it would, you know, interrupt your regular sneezing.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
No, this was really monumental and fascinating to see the layers of history and different piers and maritime stuff that has sort of aged and disintegrated over time and so on and so forth.
Well, what I got out of it was just the tremendous variety of flora and fauna that you see just walking in a relatively small area. You know, you see the forest, you see all kinds of, you know, birds and deer and things like that. Then you're on the beach, and you have a sandy part of the beach, and you have a rocky part of the beach. There was one part of the beach we were walking on. It was nothing but shells of, you know, shellfish or whatever you call them, crabs, but no rocks. Just everything was former creatures that now were just debris. It was just incredible seeing all that, and of course everything going on in the water as well. So sometimes, you know, you take it for granted. I haven't taken that walk in such a long time, but there are so many places around where you can do things like that.
Yeah, it's so true. And just get out, see what there is to see. We've explored all kinds of different areas. We've gone through some of the trails, some of the parks, and we did some of the Greenway trails recently. Mm-hmm. Just seeing what's going on as these things open up in the outdoor season here. You know, barbecues, you get off in the distance, and everybody around getting exercise themselves and taking in the scenery and the new growth here in the summertime. So, yeah, definitely worthwhile. Find a trail, find a beach, and explore. See what's in your backyard.
But your feet may hurt after you do it, and that's what happened to me. Because all this walking, a lot of walking, and I guess, you know, I haven't been walking enough. So if I keep walking, my feet won't hurt as much.
Yeah, I think it lubricates the cartilage and the joints and stuff when you're using them. But if you're sedentary, your joints tend to become more stiff. So it's important to be flexible and definitely stretch. You know, you don't want to pull a muscle getting out there on that, trail terrain, because those uneven pathways definitely stretch the boundaries of various ankles and joints and so on and so forth. But it's fun. And the beach, I think you work like twice as hard when you're walking on a sand or a gravel surface. Just it feels like you're in space. And you stop and get on a hard surface, you feel like you've just gotten off a conveyor belt or mm-hmm. One of those walking pathways. So, yeah, you're going to challenge yourself in ways maybe you wouldn't ordinarily be challenged, but it's worth the effort, and I'd say probably good for dexterity and overall well-being.
I just like getting reacquainted with the natural scene that's around and seeing things that are thriving. I know we just marked the 10th anniversary of the trail you were mentioning before, the Greenbelt Trail that was started. And to see things like that happen, I was reading an article about this. This is something that Steve Englebright was spearheading, former county legislator, now state assemblyman. Basically, people were against it. People were against having a Greenbelt Trail going through their neighborhood because they didn't know what it was, and they thought all kinds of people would be passing by their homes. And now, of course, you know, having had this thing around for 10 years, people love it. It used to be that people were saying, I remember this, people were saying, this is going to be a highway. We have to build another highway. We have to have a bypass for 25A, Route 25A here on the upper, on the north shore of Long Island. I guess it would be 25B, which they actually have in Queens. You need to somehow bypass all this traffic by making more traffic. And The alternative was, no, let's not do that. Let's instead have a trail with nature where people can walk, things like that. Imagine. And people couldn't imagine at first, so they were opposed to it. It just makes me think of all the things people are just by default opposed to until it works, like recycling, you know, or banning plastic bags, or who knows, health insurance that everybody can have. Things that we just assume, high-speed rail, electrification of the train tracks out to Port Jefferson, things people assume are impossible until they happen.
Yeah, the other thing that comes to mind is smoking bans.
Smoking ban, remember that?
We used to smoke on airplanes, and you know, there was concern that wouldn't go over well. Well, it did. You know, people decided that this is better for the greater good and in the interest of general societal health. So yeah, be open-minded when you're perhaps in a mentality that's more traditional or inflexible, that maybe isn't
set in your ways.
Yeah, it's a mentality, you know, that we plan and do our civil engineering for just vehicles. And I think this all the time, you know, when we talk about roads and stuff, well, why not come up with ways for other types of transportation like bicycles and mm-hmm. and like your footpaths, as you've mentioned. So it's all about integrating those different forms of transportation into something that works for everyone.
Look at what's happened with bicycles in New York City. Just look at New York City, how it's exploded there, how there are bike trails and all kinds of people pedaling around that never were doing it before. And then you mentioned smoking before. I remember when having a smoking section in a restaurant was considered something that could put it out of business. And then when you ban it altogether and you can't smoke in a restaurant, oh, my God, how's anyone going to survive? And then banning it in bars. Well, you know what? It's working. It's working just great. People are healthier as a result. And these are things that you can get used to. It just proves that we can get used to almost anything. We just have to be determined to do it. And I just, you know, I want to focus a little bit on the positive things that have happened, on the progress that has been made when we set our minds to it. You see wind turbines, you know, creating power. And you see solar panels everywhere. You see people putting these things on their homes and saving a ton of money and not polluting. You see power plants that are shutting down, you know, dirty power plants because they're no longer needed. These are good things. These are things we should be celebrating and not doing stupid things like trying to bring back coal. We should be figuring out how to employ people in new fields and embrace new technology, you know, with intelligence, obviously, not blindly, and not see it as a threat, because this is how we move forward. And I know sometimes we focus a lot on the negative, because there is a lot of negative to focus on, but I think sometimes we forget to focus on what we've accomplished, the good things that are happening. And there are so many good things. Just, you know, walking around in nature and seeing, you know, we have bald eagles now. We didn't have them before. We didn't have so many deer. I know some people are upset by the deer that we have in the area now. But, you know, it's not that big a deal. If you drive carefully, you won't hit them. And there are ways to avoid getting deer ticks and various other issues like that. Of course, there are some concerns, but nature is good to have around. It's a lot better to have thriving systems of wildlife. We saw, what did we see today? We saw, was that a groundhog? Was that a, we don't even know what it was.
I think it's a groundhog. It looks sort of like a beaver, but the tail is not as wide and flat.
Hey, I don't think we have beavers here.
Nah, but we should, mm-hmm. Being that it's the state animal.
But it could have been a woodchuck.
It may have been a woodchuck or other kind of mammal, like a large rodent-like mammal, but not quite as big as a raccoon.
Uh-huh, yeah. And we see raccoons all the time, and I don't know, it's just great to see wildlife around. And
well,
so, you know, we stopped traffic on 25A the other day. Remember, we were driving down the main road around here, and there was a family of raccoons crossing 25A right by the train station, and there was another car coming, and we were able to stop that car, and we both waited for the entire family to cross. That's actually the second time something like that has happened to me. It's the most incredible feeling to know that you're saving these lives, and you're stopping your daily activity for a second just to let them cross safely in the middle of Route 25A. And that's magic.
Yeah, and it's a reminder that there's like a larger, like city planning and civil engineering are all things that exist within an ecosystem. And the signs of life that we're talking about are the signs of a functioning ecosystem and habitat that, you know, those creatures are eating cohabitating with a bunch of other creatures and are important parts of the cycle of life, as it were, whether it's plants or animals, and same with birds, seabirds. It's great to see all of them thriving in this really kind of wonderful maritime environment on the North Shore. So enjoy it. Appreciate it. And just with like solar, you mentioned, there's a lot of state programs. New York State's got some great stuff. And just the brief amount of research I've done, I think this year is the last year people can design and begin building a solar system and get a 30%, I think, rebate or tax break. I'm not quite sure which it is, but it's really been part of the structure that has been an impetus or a catalyst for the development of more and more alternatives like solar. So if you're thinking about solar and have budgeted for it, and there are some steps you can take to get a quote and get the ball rolling and still qualify for that 30% break. And programs like that are really helpful. They help people who otherwise may not consider investing in something like that, buying all the equipment and paying contractors and stuff, because it is cost prohibitive from the start. But when you amortize the cost and consider the impact going forward once it's been installed and you have that option, it's I think very beneficial, and a lot of people have realized that around Long Island and New York State, and that goes for larger municipal projects too. So whether you're voting for it or considering it yourself, it's definitely good to have those other options and have them as a part of the mix in what we're designing and planning, like within this ecosystem and habitat. And it is affordable and will be affordable for the rest of this year. You get 30%, yeah, and it tapers off by 2021.
I want to know why they're stopping it. Why don't they continue that? Why does it have to expire? Why can't we continue to encourage people to do this?
It's like tax credits and stuff that was put in with other forms of alternative fuels and bioenergy and these kinds of things. They get subsidized because in a lot of respects the other energy companies are also subsidized, which, you know, you can go into and has been noted before. But the point is, this had been voted on and was included, I believe, in something that was passed in 2015. And so that's what it was. It was like a renewable energy tax credit. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, stimulates people buying American solar panels or paying local contractors and so on. And that stimulates the industry. So when there's a mandate for a certain uptake, then these state programs help get customers to actually participate. So it will eventually taper off there in 2021 or whatever. But that's the state level. There may be federal programs. There could be other.
Have you seen the government lately?
Well, they're a mess. But you might see different types of state programs. Maybe instead of the whole install, maybe they'll select certain parts of the components, like panels themselves or inverters, or maybe you'll get a state program that gives you a break on labor for the guys that are going to come out and survey or help you.
Clearly, the state level is where we have to get things done, because right now we can't get things done on the federal level. They view solar power as the enemy. They view coal as their salvation. It's insane. It's backwards. But that's what it is right now.
Yeah, I would not underestimate I think the state is not seeing itself, it does not realize its own power and how important that is, because it really is. It's good to see businesses and industries thriving, whether they're out of state and you're stimulating that commerce, or you're innovating and inspiring people to do things within the state and create opportunities here. It's still important to do, and the state has not done enough. I think has not done as much as they absolutely could do.
Well, speaking of the power of the state, there is one day left, and that's tomorrow, in the legislative session in New York. And when this happens, all kinds of things are the result of last-minute pushes. Just yesterday, and this is historic. The green light New York initiative passed. What that is, that allows people who are undocumented to obtain driver's licenses. Now, the thing is, this is what's insane about this. We have I think 6 Democratic Long Island senators. They won. They were ushered in historic election, and Long Island is primarily Democratic now, at least in the Senate. Every single one of them voted against this. They all voted against it. It's a Democratic initiative, but they were all scared of voting for it because people on Long Island are, well, I hate to say, very conservative as a rule. And not always informed. And I'll tell you why I feel they're not always informed on this particular case. The backlash against undocumented people having driver's licenses makes absolutely no sense to me. I'm trying to figure it out. I really am. I'm trying to understand the logic. Who exactly is hurt by somebody having a license to drive a car, regardless of their immigration status? I don't even say how the immigration status is relevant. You know, if imagine this. Imagine you're in this country without documentation. That's its own issue, okay? And you've got all kinds of people that deal with that get all concerned with this. Fine. But imagine you're in this country without documentation. Should your credit cards work? You know what I mean? Should you be able to buy things, you know, with impunity without an alarm going off? Yes? No? If you say yes, why? Why would you allow that? Why would you allow people who are in this country illegally to use credit cards and continue to live here illegally? Yeah, you know? And if you say no, really? You don't want people to be able to buy anything in this country? I mean, is it really relevant why they're here, how they're here? They're making legal transactions. So what's wrong with that? I mean, how is that related to their immigration status? So by the same token, your ability to drive should not be influenced by what your immigration status is. Because if you make it so that it is, well, then all of a sudden you have people that are driving without licenses. And that makes things more dangerous. That makes things a lot more dangerous for them, for us. And it just creates this element of fear. Do you know what happened a number of months ago? I think, Kyle, you remember that horrible accident on the Long Island Railroad where three guys got killed by a train. You know, they got into a fender bender with somebody, and the crossing gate was down. And rather than stay and wait for the cops, they fled. Unfortunately, they fled directly into the path of a train. They were killed. Well, now you might ask, why they do something like that? Well, from what I've heard, they were undocumented. They didn't want to wait around for the police. Because if they had waited around for the police would have found out they were undocumented, and they would have been deported. Never mind that they had lived here for a while, they were employed, they were upstanding members of the community. That was enough to make them risk their lives, and it cost them their lives. Do we want more scenarios like that? I mean, the alternative, you know, if you don't have that, okay, you have some people who are here without documentation, who are working, who are making a living, who are paying for things, paying taxes, whatever. And, you know, you can deal with whatever situation you want to deal with, but you don't have to instill fear while you do it. You know, it's an unhealthy situation that is being created by making people live in fear. And you're not really solving the problem. So I don't get it. And I also don't get why politicians would be afraid to vote for something that they allegedly stand for. You know, the logic I heard was, yeah, if we vote for this, we'll get voted out of office in the next election. Okay, but what you got elected. And if you don't vote for the things you believe in, what's the difference between you getting voted out and you basically being elected and not standing up for what you believe in? What's the difference? I don't get it.
Yeah, as opposed to being a placeholder or, you know, someone who's basically ineffective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to be a Democrat, be a Democrat. Don't be a Republican. You know, there are plenty of people, plenty of Republicans who will do that job. You don't have to do it for them. So if you believe in something, stand up for it and explain why. Have the dialogue, you know. Don't just impose your will and say, too bad, you know, you people didn't vote for me. Explain why it makes sense. I think, you know, you can have that conversation and people might understand, or you might be able to reach some kind of common ground. But I honestly don't see how having people legally driving is bad for anybody. I really don't see that.
It's like a resentment that they'd be having any kind of credentials, right? Because it's like, well, you know, theoretically you could have applied for asylum or be involved in the green card process, and Were it not for the current state of affairs in the country, you might, for all intents and purposes, become a citizen and be granted those rights. But here is a sort of interim as a byproduct and an alternate way of dealing with the influx of people, mm-hmm. to have safer roads and at least be able to place people. It's an approximation of an ID, and they won't. They refuse to accept that because it's that attitude that these are not equal. They have a less right, and it's that thing of like labeling people aliens and not human. Yeah, exactly.
Less human, aliens, illegals.
So if you give them a card, you give them a card, you legitimize them, and that's how it's seen, I think. And that's the attitude, the mentality. It's not that their roads are safer. And gee, you know, I appreciate that people are at least. We're able to keep track of drivers, and I'm not sending people. You know, I'm not going out on the road on my own peril, and I'm going to have people dashing from the scene if I get into some kind of fender bender that then I can't. They won't be accountable, yeah, and I can't get help when I'm injured.
What do you think is going to happen when somebody's told they can't get a license because they are undocumented? Do you think they're just going to say, well, I guess I can't drive anymore? No, they're going to have to drive to get to work if they are in this country working. So you can't expect everybody to simply say, okay, where's the exit? I'll go back home. This is their home. In fact, many, many people have been here for the vast majority of their lives. Many have been here since they were children. When this all started, and we talked about this, it was originally supposed to target violent criminals. Yeah, get violent criminals out of the country. Who can disagree with that? Well, that started to change. Then all of a sudden, it's other people too. In fact, if you're in this country, you're a criminal because, you're undocumented. So therefore, everybody's a criminal. And then it got extended to children as well. No. People who have been here since they were two. You know, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about people who have been here since they were toddlers not being able to get driver's licenses. It's not a black and white issue. And I just wish, you know, we could have a dialogue on this and reach some common ground and some humanitarian ground. Because the way we are dealing with this now, it's disgusting. It's horrible. It's so cold-blooded.
It's oversimplified. We've oversimplified something and made the individuals who are the victims, who are at the effect of this, into a subclass or people that are somehow less deserving. And it's the sort of antithesis of our own genesis as a country. And here we are willfully kind of blind to it. Because out of convenience and they're it's as I said, oversimplification of something that is indeed incredibly complex and deserves a lot more than the sort of reductionist and selfish politics that are at play right now.
Well, now speaking also of the 1 day left in the legislative session, there is also a renewed push to legalize recreational marijuana here in New York. Latest news we've heard on this, and again, we have until tomorrow for this to happen before we have to wait until next year. And if we have to wait till next year, it's for the most stupid reasons. It's because, you know, we can't figure out how to spend the revenue and how exactly to allow certain places to opt out, et cetera, rather than the thing we can all agree on, which is let's stop victimizing people, let's stop imprisoning people, let's make sure that those people who have been in prison for these ridiculous offenses get some justice. Well, the latest news, last-minute negotiations to legalize recreational marijuana in New York before the end of the legislative session have apparently fallen through. Sources in both the Senate and the Assembly say that the plans have apparently gone up in smoke and that lawmakers are now working to win passage of a bill to decriminalize the use of marijuana and expunge arrest records. I mean, it's something, but we can do so much better. The bill being considered by the legislature would erase the arrest records of up to 600,000 New Yorkers, mostly black and Latino, charged with possession of small amounts of marijuana. lives ruined because of this. It's simply insane how people have been victimized. Now, as to why legalization seems to be a no-go at this point, sources say that they became bogged down over a number of issues, including how to spend $300 million generated by taxes on the sale of marijuana, whether localities who don't want to legalize the sale of recreational marijuana could opt out and refuse to do it. I know here in Long Island, that's what our Democratic-led politicians are saying, because, again, they don't have the guts to stand up for what they actually believe in. Governor Cuomo has been intensely negotiating the bill with legislative leaders, and he said the following this morning. Different people say different things on the number of members who are ready to support it. I don't know. There's still a question mark. He's still said to be pushing to legalize marijuana. Assembly and Senate sources say it's most likely dead. But then again, it's Albany. Session ends Wednesday, and in the waning hours, sometimes weird things happen. So let's hope weird things happen and that this we can move on already, because it's long overdue. We can sort out the details, but let's get this done, and we can move on and be proud of the state we're in.
Yeah, I think it would be unfortunate. It would be a waste if this did not go ahead. And I think, as I was saying earlier, or I was alluding to, that, you know, states need to be a bit more brazen and lead. A lot of federal action comes from the activities of states. And for this, I mean, we could open it up and talk about a lot of different aspects of this, but I think that, like, some of the most important things to be said specifically with regard to revenue are, you know, I don't think that the governor needs as much control over that revenue. I think they should come up with a panel of concerned people or some kind of organization that is not beholden to any sort of any one interest or the other, but rather can manage that those funds and allocate them in such a way that people who are struggling can benefit. And I would say chiefly the education, you know, education system. Give it to schools. That mm-hmm. revenue easily could really help with budget shortfalls and other problems in the education system, and help with programs, indeed, social programs in schools, specifically around substance abuse and addiction and bullying and so on and so forth. There's plenty of deserving areas to send that money and make sure that it is spent. I just don't get, like, why Cuomo needs more power over how that revenue is used. But I just would really like to see this opportunity not be wasted, because it is, it is a reality. This is, I kind of, after reading some of the articles, like what you're pointing out, I just want to say, like, grow up already. I mean, we need to get on with it. I'd implied going slow and being measured and taking time. That's fine. It's worthwhile to do this the right way for New York.
Enough. We've been going slow for a long time.
But going slow enough that everybody can get their hands in the pot, including corporate entities and people that want to dissuade growth and other industries from getting involved. Because I think there's a lot of people that are saying, okay, well, you know, this isn't really going to help with small farms, so this is just going to be a cash crop.
Yeah, but you know what? You can work that stuff out. Legalize it now. Let's work out the balance. I agree. Corporations should not be a part of this. It should be from the people. But we can work all that out after it's legalized.
Yeah, yeah. And, there's been some comments. There was a statement from the New York Farm Bureau, which is very positive and would like to see this, specifically because of the downturn in the amount of small farms here in the state. And mm-hmm. this could bolster and be a robust crop, especially in areas where you have land that's being remediated or otherwise cannot be used, or you need a cover crop of some sort. This really makes sense and fits in with the existing agricultural community here. And I think that, yeah, you will have large companies, and you will have out of state, obviously. You'll have imported products from out of state, but you should treat local contributions and industry just as you would any other agricultural thing. And it should be treated like, you know, heirloom tomatoes and anything else people grow. For recreation, for medicine, and or commodity, but it's so deserving and really about time.
Well, it's also something that is prone to all kinds of misinformation, and if you listen to the wrong sources, you might get the wrong impression. Do some reading, do some research, and you'll find some surprising things. In fact, I just found this editorial or opinion piece in the Daily News. This person is writing, "Society taught me cannabis consumers were lazy and drugged out failures. I found myself in rooms with people who had multiple degrees and families who were successful and responsible members of their communities. In 2015, after heavy consideration and much internal debate, I started my own business providing communications and business development services to cannabis companies. I now serve as a president of Women Grow, an organization whose mission is to connect, educate, empower, and inspire the next generation of cannabis leaders. Obviously, I have a financial interest in cannabis legalization coming to New York, but that's not what motivates me here. After 4 years of working in this industry, I can say with confidence that a regulated cannabis market will not harm our children. It will actually protect them. 5 years after Colorado legalized cannabis, young people are not using marijuana any more than they were before it became legal. The number of Colorado high school students reporting they've tried marijuana has remained unchanged since 2005, while the number of students trying marijuana before age 13 declined significantly from 9.2% in 2015 to 6.5% in 2017. These are things to consider. These are things to, and of course, you know, children and young adults are high in the priority of everybody involved in this. And yes, we've talked about this before, where you have a regulated market, kids will be restricted from getting access to that a lot more than they will be if they're buying it on a street corner.
Yeah, and you have other substances, specifically opioids, vaping and nicotine products, which are widely advertised, and as well as the concept of binge drinking and stuff that I think older teens and college students become more and more exposed to as they become young adults. So, the contributions this could make to educating them and making their academic accomplishments more fruitful, I think, outweigh the risks involved. And the people concerned ought not prevent the entire thing because they want one or the other specific program to get attention. That's stuff that you can invest in and design and build around a legal, decriminalized, and flourishing marketplace, but to prevent the thing from even occurring and trying to get some sort of results and some real change, I think that benefit that detracts from affected communities and black and brown people who have been incarcerated and been at the effect of the drug war proper. They don't get the opportunity as well as anybody else. And I think that, you know, they should at least be given the chance. And if you want to create development funds and programs to lift them up and help them create businesses to compete, that's how you should do it, but don't bake it in and prevent the entire thing if you don't get your way.
You know, another topic today is Election Day. It's Election Day in various parts of the state, I think the country. We've been watching this race locally, right next door in Port Jefferson, for mayor, which has been really fascinating. It's fascinating because the challenger is a Trump surrogate, and boy, that has started to show in recent weeks.
But he'll never admit it. Well, I mean, he backpedals, he talks us sideways. It's crazy how little he wants you to think he's involved.
We went to a debate, and he wouldn't even say the name. But this guy was the surrogate in Suffolk County for Trump, and obviously he still has those connections, and everybody who supports him also supports Trump as well. But here's the thing. He's been basically pouring money into this campaign. We've never seen anything like this in this area. Usually these small villages on the North Shore have, you know, rather low-key races. But this one, oh, boy. This is the tactic. This is the Trump tactic. You make yourself into a victim somehow. They've poured, I think, four or five times the amount of money that the incumbent has poured into this race, and they've made themselves the victims by claiming that their signs are being stolen. I can say, I will swear on whatever you want me to swear on, their signs are not being stolen because their signs are everywhere. I've seen them for weeks. There was an instance where signs from both campaigns were removed because they were on the wrong part of the street or something like that. That situation was dealt with and resolved and addressed and all that. But as far as signs being, well, here's what's going on. They're driving around. You can go to Port Jefferson now and see this. And in fact, you have just over 2 hours to vote, too, if you're a resident of Port Jefferson. Polls close at 9 o'clock. But there's this massive truck driving around with this sign. And on the sign, you know, it's one of these big flat billboard-type trucks. If you take a corner too sharply, it'll tip right over. Hasn't happened yet, I don't think.
It's like a driving billboard, yeah.
It's basically having the names of the candidates here, and on the bottom it says, "Sorry, they stole most of our signs, so we had to do this. Hopefully, they don't steal the truck." Yeah. Okay. So you create this they that's out there stealing signs, and a they that's going to steal the truck. And first of all, do you know how much money it costs to put this together? It costs thousands of dollars to get this truck and to make that sign. It takes time. I know, because we've made banners in the past. We're talking weeks of layout and printing. It takes time. So you have to pretty much predict that your signs will be stolen. And they've also printed all these signs that on the sign it says, "Please don't steal this sign." Which it just seems to me like, this works out well for you to make it seem like people are going around stealing your signs. But again, the signs are everywhere. I see more signs for them than I see for anybody. It's eye pollution is what it is. But it's just, you know, any hope that maybe this guy was separating himself from Trump kind of disappears when you see tactics like this, when you see this kind of campaigning, which is alien to a local race like this. But this is the kind of tactic that you can expect. Money, where's the money coming from? So much. And according to various studies that I've seen, and most of it is not local. Most of it's coming from other sources outside the village. A lot of people are up in arms about some other things too. We went to a debate a couple of weeks ago. It was interesting to see, but there were some things said there, and somebody wrote this this piece that I found online. This post is in reply to a disturbing comment made by a candidate for Port Jefferson mayor, and that would be John J. Laval, the Trump surrogate. I was reading in the most recent edition of a local newspaper, Times Beacon Record, some excerpts from the recent debate held on June 7th, where Mr. Laval referred to the Upper Port Jefferson revitalization area as ghetto, and that workforce and affordable housing would turn into Section 8 housing. Now, just to give you some perspective here, the upper part of Port Jefferson is being rebuilt in various ways. There are all kinds of plans to have affordable housing up there. And obviously that is something that goes against the Trump viewpoint of affordable housing and revitalization and things like that. Now, continuing with this piece, having over 15 years of economic development and housing policy experience as a U.S. Presidential Management Fellow, Deputy Commissioner of Community Development and Affordable Housing Program Manager, I would like to provide some clarity and perhaps ensure accuracy in describing housing and economic development policies. First, the term ghetto is laden with racial and ethnic bias and has no place in describing people, their homes, or the community where they live. Having been raised in a community known as Gordon Heights that was erroneously labeled ghetto, my community was often dumped on and continues to be and overlooked by politicians, government officials, and the like. We hardworking middle and upper middle class blacks, Latinos, and people of color work as hard as anyone else, owned our homes, operated businesses, and paid taxes, and time and again our beautiful community of Gordon Heights was labeled ghetto. Once the label was made, it stuck and allowed people around us to insinuate that we were not as important as the rest. We worked hard and diligently to dispel this myth. Our Chamber of Commerce was birthed during this time, and as the founding president, I am honored that we have continued the legacy of supporting our family-owned and larger businesses that continue to flourish here. I want to remind you and your team, Mr. Laval, these are treacherous times we live in. Racial divide and lack of inclusion have created an environment where many of us feel we can say whatever we want in a public space. Words have power, Mr. Laval. Heather Heyer's death in Charlottesville in Virginia, and Marcello Lucero in Patchogue taught us that. Second, there is no such thing as Section 8 housing. Section 8 is a federal voucher program that provides the renter with a subsidy to offset the cost of market rate rent. The landlord is the deciding factor. The landlord decides to accept the voucher, manage the property, etc. Section 8 helps whites, blacks, Latino, veterans, and disabled populations of working class people. To make a statement that affordable and workforce housing would turn into Section 8 housing is both erroneous, insensitive, and extremely biased. The connotation is that we don't want them living near us. Let me share something with you about housing on Long Island in case you are not aware. Young professionals, recent college graduates, seniors, and young families are fleeing Long Island due in large part to the lack of affordable housing. The national guideline defines affordability where no more than 30% of household income is spent on housing costs. The Long Island Weekly noted that based on survey results, there is a mass exodus of young people from Long Island, with the top reason being the lack of affordable housing. To be more precise, roughly 71% of young adults currently residing in Long Island are determined to leave it behind in the next 5 years to come. Are these young people ghetto? Who are you referring to when you use the term ghetto? I hope and pray, after you read this, you'll do some research, think about your comments, you will reconsider your words, and change your approach so that we can all benefit from an open and honest exchange that can lead to solutions, not more division. And, you know, Kyle, we were there and we heard those remarks, and I didn't think as much as this person who posted this. Nicole Christian Gordon, by the way, was the person who wrote this piece, and it just made me really think. Yeah, these are the little signals that are sent out to your supporters that, yeah, we don't want them living there. It's going to turn into this wasteland, and it's going to be a crime-infested place. In fact, they even said that directly. This guy said that he doesn't even drive through there. He drives around it because he's embarrassed to show that part of the neighborhood to people. And I don't know anybody else who does that, to be honest. It's just really disturbing to think that is somebody who wants to run the community.
Yeah, it's also worth noting that this is all in the conversation about improving an area such as this. And they're describing the solutions as something that will promote the contrary. And I think that is it's very misleading, and I think does a huge disservice, I think, to people trying to understand the project in and of itself, like misnomers, Section 8, all that. I mean, that's very well articulated, and I would not have thought that those words had as much kind of what do you say? It has much power behind them. It kind of subtle.
It's a dog
meaning.
Whistle.
Dog
whistle.
Yeah, it's a total dog whistle. Yeah, yeah. Subtle meaning.
And you say things like, you know, in this campaign, the word blight has been used. Like there's this blight around Port Jefferson
Urban
and
blight.
Port Jefferson Station.
Yeah.
Which, you know, there are closed shops everywhere you look, but there are also things that are opening. There are also new places. It doesn't bother me that certain chains like McDonald's and The Gap have closed in that region. I prefer to have less chains. I like to see new places, local places opening, and I am seeing that. Port Jefferson Station is a place that obviously needs work, and there are plans that are well underway to rebuild that. Uptown Funk is what it's called, I think. But the most important thing about that, we've seen many plans that are poorly executed, but the fact that affordable housing is a priority, I think that is a good signal that this is something that's going to address the needs of that community and not simply try and sweep them out and replace it with something that is safer in their eyes. That's not how you deal with issues like this.
And I frankly, just as a sort of a young person, I mean, it's really just the business case alone. Like, they're looking at commuters and people who are of age to make money and also spend a lot of money. They don't own property and may not have the positions that the geezers who are staying around and who don't spend money, who don't go out, who you know, own property and basically just pay taxes and complain about taxes. I mean, how short-sighted is that from the business-minded conservative who wants to see stimulus in an area and revenues increase and so on and so forth? I mean, why wouldn't you want to pack a neighborhood with people who are working, young, have families, who are buying things at stores, who are participating and keep it a vibrant place versus what? People that are you know, on fixed incomes, not working, not spending money, not mobile.
It's just very easy to categorize and label an entire community as one way or another. And I just see very disturbing blanket labels being applied here when it's not the case at all. Yeah, there are things that can be improved. There is no question about that, and that's something we can all work on together. But to simply write it off and to imply it is very racist, actually, to imply that because an area is Hispanic that MS-13 is running the place and that there's prostitution and all kinds of gangs. That's not the case. You know, we spend time here, and we know that's not the case.
I was waiting.
But it's easy to get people to react if you say that.
Yeah, it's a trigger or a code word, like we were talking about earlier. But I was just waiting when we were at the debate that MS-13 was. It was on the tip of somebody's tongue.
Oh,
I
it
knew
came up. That was
it
said.
Was definitely going to be said. I didn't hear it in the actual conversation, but it I'm sure was in there, implied.
We are out of time. If you're in Port Jefferson or other areas that are having elections today, you have, I think, until 9 o'clock to vote, so get out there and vote and stay part of the conversation. That's what's important. OTW at 2600.com. That's our email address. We'll see you next week. Good night. Down on the jungle, living-